as you open up to Exodus chapter 20, we are again concluding the Ten Commandments, and God is speaking to one of these issues of our hearts, and that's the constant desire to have more and more and more. And we'll see how this constant desire not only hurts us, but it hurts our neighbors as well, and it ruins our relationship that we have with God. So thankfully, though, we will see how God not only tells us not to do that, but he graciously provides a gift to us that can satisfy our every need and our every desire. And as we begin, we start with Exodus 20, verses 1 and 2, as we always have. And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And I know you've heard it 8 times, but we always need to remember that these commandments, all of them, any of them, are not a list of things that we have to do in order to be saved or in order to earn God's love. God already loves us. He's telling his people in the Old Testament, look, I've already brought you out of Egypt. I have delivered you and protected you and cared for you. There's nothing to earn. I've given it all to you. So he says that to Israel, and even more so to us. He says, I already love you. I've already saved you through Christ, through his death and resurrection. I've sent him. The work is done by faith. You are mine. So these aren't requirements. This is simply the reality of what life now looks like as a beloved child of God. And so we follow these instructions for the best life for ourselves, our neighbors, and the glory of our God. And today's commandment is this. It's actually 2 commandments, but we rolled them into one because they're so similar. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. So no coveting. Now, we all use the word covet on a daily basis, but for the one or two of us that don't, what is coveting and why is it so bad? Well, here's what coveting is. It is the sinful desire in our hearts to acquire for ourselves anything that belongs to our neighbor's. But to help us understand a little better, here's how Martin Luther, the great reformer, explains it. We should fear and love God so that we do not scheme to get our neighbor's inheritance or house, or get it in a way which only appears right legally, but help and be of service to keep him in it. And above that, we should fear and love God so that we do not entice or force away our neighbor's wife, workers or animals, or turn them against him, but urge them to stay and do their duty. Okay? So not only, again, a prohibition of doing something bad, but every commandment at the same time is an opportunity to do good and be righteous in that way. So, how do we covet? And again, how do we not covet? The possibilities are endless. That's the, and I mean this very sarcastically, nice thing about sinning, right? By desiring our neighbor's things, or even planning to get them, right? It's one thing to say, ooh, that's nice, I want that. But then to say, okay, how am I actually going to get that? And we think, I want their status, I want their life, I want their friends, I want their money, their house, their car, I want his job with the corner office. It should be mine, and it will be mine. No, that's evil. Don't do that. We have this constant thinking of, oh man, if only I had that, what they have, I would be so happy. And we spend our time dreaming about all of these things, and we fool ourselves into thinking that if we just had that thing that happens to belong to our neighbor, then all of our problems would go away. All of our sadness would be gone. Our worries, far from us. And as these thoughts take over, we are compelled to act, to take, to scheme, to manipulate and tweak and massage things away from others and towards ourselves. We do it all the time. But why? See, God is our creator. I think all of us know that, which means he made us. But he's also our sustainer. That means that God doesn't just make us and set it and forget it and then say, hey, I put you here. You figured the rest out on your own. That's not the kind of God that he is. Instead, he also sustains us in that he provides everything that we need in our lives. Everything to be alive and content and to fulfill our purpose as his children on this earth. God tells this to us very clearly, very many times. But unfortunately, there are voices in this world and thoughts in our head and desires in our heart that take our eyes off of God's perfect provision and sustenance and on to other things. And so the reasons why we covet are many, but here are the big ones. Number one, we covet because of peer pressure. Maybe some of you still remember the concept of keeping up with the Joneses. Maybe some of you don't. But it is a concept in where you have this hypothetical, imaginary set of neighbors, the Joneses, and the Joneses have very nice things, and they have a very cozy place in life. And if the Joneses, you see, have a riding lawnmower, and you only have a little push lawnmower, doesn't even have zero-turn capabilities, you look like a fool compared to the Joneses in the neighborhood. We should probably get a zero-turn riding lawnmower, right? Or if you see that the Joneses' kids, they've got a Nintendo Switch, two. My kids only have a Nintendo Switch 1, and boy, have I not heard the end of it, right? I gotta keep up with these Joneses, get the nicest, newest things, play the new games, it's good. My kids shouldn't be the only ones that don't have one. And you know, we like our Toyota, it's good, does the job. But the Joneses, did you see? They have an Acura. Now, Toyota's nice, sure, it'll get you from A to B, but the Acura has heated cup holders. Do I need them? No. But it's better to have them to not. You know, let's just go ahead and get an Acura so we're not the family without the Acura in the neighborhood, right? It happens. But peer pressure also comes to our teenagers, our high schoolers, right? Can apply to adults as well, but about the clothing that we wear, about the phones that we use. Maybe some of you have heard, Mom, Dad, I know that the iPhone is 4 times more expensive than the Android phone, but are you really going to send me to school being the only kid that texts with green bubbles and not the blue iMessage bubbles? I'm going to be an outcast. Oh, okay, okay. Or the products that they use, the gear that they have. There's a constant pressure from those around us to have something that they do. It's always, always, always. The second one, and this one is very close to my heart, and that I hate it with the passion of 1,000 suns, is advertising. We covet because of advertising. If you look on my computer, I have every ad blocker, every IP address hider, all this stuff. My wife can't use my devices because there are so many configurations. It drives her crazy. She's a wonderful woman, though. It's my problem. I hate ads. I hate being manipulated. I hate having things suggested to me, things being presented to me as necessary. Anyway, but advertising invites all of us to take a good, careful look at our lives and finally realize how truly miserable we've been this whole time without even noticing. But, oh, good. Now that we realize how miserable we are, they just actually happen to sell the exact thing that would cure our misery. My favorite example of all of this is the As Seen on TV commercials. You know, you watch TV, you're minding your own business, catching up with your stories, and then somebody goes, hey, you hate how long your garden hose always is and how much time it takes to wrap the thing around. And then you go, never thought about it before, but now I do, right? Well, turns out they sell that, you know, expanding hose that once pressure's added, it doubles in the volume. It's actually kind of cool, right? But shame on them for telling me about it. Or you have the ceramic nonstick frying pan, and then they show, you know, it's always like the before is the black and white. It's some dopey actor trying to like jackhammer a black burnt egg with a spatula off their frying pan. They're sweating, and they all go, what? There's got to be a better way. Or back in the 50s and the 60s, you'd see these commercials of a woman with her son, and she's cooking, and they go, well, wouldn't you rather take your boy to the zoo? She goes, yeah, but I got to cook. And you go, oh, a busy modern woman like you doesn't have time to cook. Introducing Swanson's TV turkey dinners, right? Cooking actually is fun. It's nice. It's good until somebody tells you it's miserable. So get the TV dinners instead. Teenagers with perfect skin are told that they will be wrinkly bags by the time they turn 25 if they do not buy the right creams to keep their skin oh so dewy and glowy. Advertisements are designed to make us covet by robbing us of our contentness. And then the third one is that we covet because of vanity and insecurity, which, when you think about it, are the exact same thing. We desire other people's things because we want to be the best. We want to be the most successful. We want to be rich because having the best and the most, things that are worth something in the eyes of society, they make us feel validated. So if the things that we have and own are worth much, we think that that makes us worth much. So the question is all desire bad? No, it's not actually. Some desires are very good and necessary. And God has promised us, again, many times, to sustain us and that we should desire his good gifts of food and shelter, good jobs, health, success, and so on for ourselves and our family. Right? In Timothy, we read, but if we have food and clothing, with these things we will be content. I mean, we probably add one more to that, right? No, 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 no. Food and clothing, you've got enough. But we need to be careful because not all desires are good. In fact, evil desires exist, and these evil desires are the root of many sins. Take a look at how we continue in Timothy. But those who desire to be rich, well, they fall into temptation, into a snare, a trap, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. So these desires, these evil desires for more and this and that, not only do they hurt you and the people around you, but they can also, after a while, pull on you and tug and violently rip you away that you are even distracted from your very faith and the very God who gives you all good things. And these desires, they are sneaky. They start small, but they pull us in. And James, when he writes, he uses a fishing lure as an example. He says, each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. We see this little desire, right? Like a fish seeing some bait, or a worm, whatever fish like these days. And we go, ooh, that actually doesn't look too bad over there. And we give in to the desire. Maybe I should check into that a little bit. Maybe I should look into that, take a little nibble, right? And once we take that bite, whoosh, we are whipped out of the water. And what happens then? Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, right? We're out of the water. We're in the sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Jesus talks about this at multiple times. You've heard, don't murder. But I say to you, anybody who hates his brother, the desire in your heart, the hatred, that's already murder. You will be lured into it. You will be yanked out of the water. As it conceives, it gives birth to the sin, and that brings death for your brother and for you. The same thing with lust. Lusting after somebody in your heart already is adultery. It's just the beginning of it, not the final symptom. So we need to be really careful with our desires. We need to keep an eye on them, and we have to ask ourselves the following questions. When it comes to any person, anything, or possession, or money, if you run into a desire, and you're wondering, is this coveting? You want to ask these questions, and if at the end of them you still think you should have them, then you're probably fine. But take a look at these. Number one, do I have enough? Now let's go over the checklist. Food, clothing. You got those? You probably have enough. I know it's a disappointingly short list, but we have to realize that many of us, all of us, have way more than that. Even if you are the poorest of the poor in our place and in our country, you still are in the top 1% of wealth in the world. We are just used to a very luxurious standard. So yes, you do have enough. These are all going to be pretty rhetorical questions, not to set you up for disappointment here, right? Will having that thing or that person truly satisfy me? No. It'll just use them and move on to something else. It's just that next thing that you think, that's going to solve my problems, fulfill my desires. Once I have that, I will be content. And then once you have it, there's just something kind of lame about something you already have or already own, isn't there? It's not as special anymore. Not as special as the thing that you don't have. I mean, how many people have broken up with somebody because they got bored in the relationship and they go, ah, finally, I'm free. And then their ex gets back with somebody else and they go, whoo, I never saw them in this light. Maybe we should get back together again. Now I want them. The other picture that I have is, I was going to put the pictures up, but I forgot, is that there's a company called Balenciaga, and they release every year a certain style of jean. And these jeans are ripped from the bottom to the top profusely, and they are stained, all muddy and dirty. They literally look like you took them out of a dumpster. And these are highly coveted pants. Now, would you grab pants out of the dumpster and wear them? Well, no, because you can get dumpster pants anytime. They're not special. They're just from the dumpster. But these Balenciaga pants cost $10,000. They look so awful. I should have put the picture up. I'll send it in an email, okay? Just subject trash jeans. Check your spam, all right? They're horrible. Look them up after the service, okay? But nothing will truly satisfy you. It's always on to the next thing. We have to learn that lesson eventually, okay? So no. And then third, did God forget to give me something? Come on. No, of course not. God has promised to sustain us. God has said he knows all of our needs better than we know our own needs. Jesus says, the birds and the trees, they don't reap or sow, and God provides them with their food. And the flowers of the field, they don't worry about how they are dressed. And God clothes them in more splendor than King Solomon himself. God has not forgotten, nor will he forget, to provide anything that we need. You have sufficiently enough. And so when you think of an item right now that you really want, or a person that you really want, or a status, or whatever that you really want, does it pass through this filter here? Yeah, probably not, right? And so the point here is not that these rules are so overly strict, but it's that our hearts are so horribly covetous, right? All right. So we know why we covet and how we covet and all those things, but remember, as I said, all of these laws provide us not only with instruction to not do the bad thing, but also an opportunity to do the opposite and the good thing. So the question is, how do we do the opposite of coveting? Number one is that we remember that we are a new creation in Christ. And here's what I mean by that. Colossians tells us, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Okay? That's who you used to be before you were saved. That's who Israel used to be before God called them and made them his own. That's who we all used to be when we were still dead in our sins, our old ways of the world, and the influence of the devil. But it's not good. And God has redeemed you. He has bought you back from all of that. So now that you have the freedom, the opportunity, the privilege to live as a new creation. So that's what we should do. Second, the antidote to being covetous is to be content, and it is to be grateful for what we have. We spend so much time thinking and obsessing about what we don't have, what we could have, what we want to have, and we forget all of the things that we actually do have. And they're not just all things that should be taken for granted. These are all gifts. They are blessings from God. They are for our good. We cannot run out of things to be thankful for. And when we turn our hearts and our attitudes towards being content and being grateful, covetousness starts to melt away slowly but surely. In Hebrews, we read, "Keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." And that's part of the real, I don't know what to call it, but that's the power of what enables us to be content and stop coveting all the time. Is what keeps us content is the all-sufficient grace of God, his love for us, his promised presence with us. And the fact that he tells us, I am here for you, I sustain you, I love you, no matter what your circumstances currently are, no matter where you are in life, no matter what joys or difficulties you're facing. And as we just had Joe read, Paul says this in Philippians, and we love to use this verse to talk about personal accomplishments or sports games, but I can do all things through Christ is about enduring hardship, suffering, and realizing that you have enough. So let's take another look. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. And when you start looking into the life of Paul, he had a lot of things to not be content about. But I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. The presence, the forgiveness, and the promise and the love of Christ are enough for us always, and they will never fall short of our needs. Be confident in that. Be content in that. Trust God when he says this. And finally, we do the opposite of coveting by helping our neighbors protect and preserve what is theirs. We don't try to lure people's spouses away from them. We don't try to poach their employees from their business. We don't undermine them in front of their children so they respect you more than them. We don't scheme to try to undercut somebody to drive them out of business if we're competing with them. We don't use legal technicalities to justify taking from somebody else when we know we shouldn't be. We don't do any of these things. Instead, we advocate for them. We turn their people back to them. We help them preserve and even multiply what they have. We hold up their reputation, reconcile their conflicts. We help them, and we're on the lookout for their best interest, because this is about loving our neighbors. God has already provided everything that we need. Why take from somebody else? Look at what David says. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul, and he leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod, your staff, they comfort me. Look at David's scenario here, his situation. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You provide for me. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. And here's the promise. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. What else could you want? We know that God will give us everything that we need. And the thing is, we've already seen him do it. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? Do you think God will sacrifice his own son for you, but he's not going to clothe you or feed you? You think God's going to give his only son and then not make sure that you have enough? That's nonsense. That's a lie that we believe. God will stop at nothing to save your life, and he will stop at nothing to sustain it. Nothing can stop God from sustaining your life. He's not going to forget. He's not going to change his mind. None of that. And because of that wonderful confidence we have that in Jesus all of our needs are and will be met, we don't have to covet anything. But we're free, again, to love our neighbors. So that wraps up the commandments for us. That's everything, well, in this section. God's got a lot more laws coming down the road. I don't want to lie to you there. But for this moment in time, these are the basic instructions as God unites them as his people. And here's the conclusion in Scripture of this section. Remember, Moses is on the mountain receiving all of these. Now when all the people saw the thunder and the flashes of lightning and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, the people were afraid and they trembled and they stood far off. And they said to Moses, "You speak to us and we will listen, but do not let God speak to us lest we die." That's how powerful, that's how magnificent of a display God puts on as he descends on the mountain so that they know these aren't suggestions, these aren't little tips. This is the law of life from the most powerful God showing his glory to you right now, and they were afraid, and they should have been. God is insanely powerful. But here's what Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, that the fear of him may be before you, that you may not sin." It's all for your good. It's all for your protection. But do show some respect. So the people stood far off while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. And here end the Ten Commandments, and this is our word from God for today.